was a pastor, I think I'm 14 or 15 years old now. And I'm happy with my friends, I'm happy with my family, I'm happy with everything you see around. The world is a pleasant place, you see, to live. Everything is as it should be. Everything is as one can desire for and long for. It was a paradise, a better place. Perfect. Nothing wrong, nothing abnormal, but everything was so perfect. So there was no thought for God or anything like that. Although at our place, you see, we were my mother would teach me, you see, to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I had to take my sisters for a walk in the morning at 4:30. And then twice a week we had to fast for our health purposes. Soon after food we had not to drink water. So I did all the things, you see, that my mother wanted me not to do. So what I would do is simply go there and from the bucket I used to drink water like an animal, you know. Instead of having the girl serve me, you know. We had a very good place. My father was very well to do. So we had chefs and attendants to attend and servers to serve. And everything was perfect. And in spite of it, we lived that sort of a life because of this old lady mother, you know. She would give you some sort of some idea of how she trained me. She loved me very much. I was the only son at the time. You see. And only in 1930, another brother was born to me. So by the time I was very well, not pampered, but well trained. In the sense that at the time I didn't like it. Because my friends would take me out, you see, to the duck shops in the street. And stand some party or something. I had no money. I had not to keep any money with me. Anything wanted, should be had from the heart. Bring the friends, you have a party spread for them. Anytime, any number of times, every day if you want. That was the order of the day. So I had no pocket money. And my father would give out alms every Sunday. So when he would be on tour, the bag would be given to me, so I used to steal from him. Yeah. Yeah. A wealthy person's son had to steal money from the pockets of the beggar. Yeah, and that's you. That's how it is. So I remember all those things, you know, the little things that I did. So that why did I steal them? Not that I needed anything, but my friend would spend for me and I had no money to spend for them. I said, look back. So I must have something as against their hospitality. That was the only thing. So, such things I did. Then we would go to pictures, theaters. Those were the days when there were silent pictures. So what happened, you see, my mother would give me money to go to the pictures. And then, well, you would go there. I could take my friends also. Then you would go there and rest of seats. Then friends would also stand me. The next time I would go with the friends. That was nice. My mother encouraged that. You have that relationship. The next time my turn came, so she would pay me the least. Very little. And she would count how many friends are going this time. So I would say about 4 of them. She said, that's right. The lowest seat. That would be absolutely on the benches. Unheard of. From our society, nobody would go there. So, my mother, I would remonstrate. I said, my mother, what are you trying to do? I'm not all alone. I have to go with these people. She said, who? Which people? What do you mean? People? Who? Friends. Oh, they are your friends, she said. That's good. If they are your friends, they will sit wherever you sit. You see, that's how she trained me. I thought, yes, that's true. Was she saying right? She said, try now. Let us see how good friends they are. So that's how she trained me. Very lavish, I felt a very strange. Under all conditions I was moving at the time. I belonged to the best of society at the time, very good circle there. And yet, my mother would see that I would see to the welfare of the servants. There were plenty of them, there were 15 of them, working on their estate, that place. And if anybody were to fall ill or anything, I had to get up in the night and inquire how they are, what they are. Then I had to even massage their body. This is their own people, you know, in the night when they are ailing and all that. My mother would want me to do all these things. So this is how she trained me.
And, well,
that's good on one side. All of a sudden, one day, what I find is Baba comes into the place, Nagpur. And I was in the school. I gave him a cycle, I was there. And at the gate, I find him standing there. I remember that day, the time when I met him. And in between, we had been there twice during the course of 5 years. So I greeted him. I passed down and threw my cycle on one side. I prostrated about down and all. And Baba was very happy. He lifted me, caressed me, and well, with his arm around my shoulder, he walked, taking the cycle. He said, "Good, I'm waiting for you for a long time. What time do you get here?" I said, "This is the time to get here." So when he came to my place, he wanted me to pay with him. And the first day I obliged. I should say I obliged. Second day, well, good. Some guests have come and obliged. Third day, what is this nonsense? Well, he's so old, how can I play with him? You see, and my games are very vigorous games, you know. I would like to play football and hockey and cricket and tug of war and all sorts of things and wrestling and this and that. What is this sort of thing? So what I did was, knowing fully well that he'd be again at the game, he'd be waiting there. So I looked from a distance, you know, and came by the wicket gate, refreshed myself, changed my clothes and went back to school, and he was waiting there. So my mother asked me in the night, why did I not turn up? I said, well, I was here. I took my bath and everything. I went for play. How is it that you are? Baba didn't see you. He was there. I said, well, I came by that. Why did you do that? My mother said. He said, well, it's all right. I saw him there and I said, if I were to see him and he were to catch hold of me, then he would ask me to play with him, which I didn't like. Do you realize what you are saying? Not his boy, and he was arrested, do you know that? I said, arrested? Through what? Yes, yes. So she just didn't say anything. She said, be careful how you behave, it doesn't look good. Do you know who he is? Why? I said, so what is about the arrested? But I was kept in the best school there in Nagpur, Karnapal. It was a missionary school. St. Francis, the same high school. I liked that school very much. But the only trouble with me was, with us, a few of them, it was a Roman Catholic school and there were a lot of non-Catholic people. Like me, I was blessed by birth. So these non-Catholics were turned as heathens. And they were not given the seats, you see, according to their merits. They were also ran people, you see, in the class, their scholars. No border was taken there, as one who was not a Catholic. So it so happened that as years passed by and we went from one highway to another way, it so happened that our turn was to sit at the back benches there when there were scripture classes. You know, there was the Old Testament, the New Testament, and there was the catechism classes and all sorts of things, according to the Roman Catholic curriculum. So we were not supposed to take turns there, not supposed to study those subjects. And it so happened that because we were not studying the subjects, then we used to lose 200 marks from our grade. So many marks left. We have to do. And in spite of our being bright and brilliant in class, our ranks would be lower. And we missed that. And moreover, we had to be very careful, you see. And we had not to play mischief. We had not to do anything of the sort. Any little noise, we'll be called and admonished and caned. So that's how. Well, one day, some teacher came there. He was taking some catechism classes. And he said, who played the mischief, and he blamed me for it. And when he blamed me, I was called to give training at the time, the fashion, the teacher's room. So, of course, I was very healthy, I didn't care for that, but I had not played the mischief that day. So, I was very much upset. I mustered all the non-Catholics there in the school and said, this is not no justice whatsoever. What we should do is to ask, go to the principal and approach him for some redress. How long are we going to be called heathens like that? How long are we going to miss our marks and ranks like in this class? We are supposed to play at the time when they are having their catechism classes or scripture classes, or we should be allowed to sit for the classes. Why are we debarred from these things? So we went there. The next day I took all the non-Catholics over there to be principal. Well, the principal was nice. He knew my father because they had a technical department over there. And my father was an engineer of repute there, so they had those connections there. So he says, he knew me. He says, what is that, Jasawala? I said, this was those injustices, and I was excited. He says, calm down. His name was Father Gros. So, French father. So I said, all right, father, but this is a grievance. So he says, all right. We'll see about it next time. We'll call a meeting for it. We'll decide one way or the other. In short, the decision was given in our favor. That those who wanted to attend the classes may do so, those who wanted to go out to play may do so. So there was a general meeting of all the students in the school, the high school and the middle school, and in that he declared the decision. So he called me out. I said, now what do you decide? He tells me. So I was caught there, I didn't know what to do. So all of a sudden I blurted out, naturally taking upon myself the responsibility. I was thinking it would not be proper if I say I would like to go and play. So I said, I would like to take the classes. So he was very happy about it. When he was happy, I was happy too.
How about me?
Oh, sir, yes, sir. So now what happened? When the classes were taken, and when we were called, he was very happy about it and all that. And I picked up the lessons and all that. The next exam, I stood first. I was very happy. And I was just showing off my belt and all that. And the Christian, and the fathers there who taught us the classes, they thought that, well, he's keen in this, so he might become a Catholic someday. They took special interest in all that. And I was very happy, and I started putting questions, and they would answer me and all that. Now, here Baba has left the place, and he would come again, and he would go again. Yes, sir. Okay. Coming in 5 minutes. One day it so happened that he passed the class and went to the next class. Some difficult questions were there. So I stood up and asked him the question. Sit down. He just curtly told me that. He insulted me, so to say. Sit down. It's a mystery, you can't know. I didn't know. It was very embarrassing there in the class. I wondered what is the mystery about the Quran. The question is asked. Well, some other question I put next day or the after that. He answered. Another question. Sit down. It's a mystery. Another question. Sit down. So it repeated like that half a dozen times. So it touched me. And at the time I had grown up all this, and I started feeling very bad, very sad and attracted towards Jesus. I said, had he been here? He has promised that he has been. I was telling his life there. He has promised to come back. Had he been here, how easy it would have been. How nice it is to follow him. How nice it is to be with him. And that the first little inkling, the longing was there. Pure, innocent longing was there. And in answer to that longing, he would come there and wait for me at the gate. See that now? That's why when my mother said, Zoroaster, I said, so what, Zoroaster? Because I was in love with Jesus. Zoroaster, nobody told me that Zoroaster and Jesus are one and the same. Nobody told me that my Baba is the same man at the time. Baba, in answer to my longing, it was a genuine longing, so much so I still remember. On several occasions, I shed tears in class. To be with him. And I missed all those years. And he was with us at our home, wanting to play with us.
And you were asking questions at home?
Yeah, I was asking questions.
My first Bible story I remember is when I was 3 or 4 years old. Or anyway, let's just call you Helen. I told you about the Helen Hatchwell. And Baba was in Mandilamim in Bombay. And shall I put my hat for you?
To you, sir.
And I was in Mandilamim where Baba was the first training ground, as Baba called it, in 1922. So we were there, and Baba was there, and my mother had taken me along to Mandilamim. I remember still the veranda, the facade of the place. And I remember one of the old Mandilim, a Mohammedan. And he is, I think it was Kaksag, and he took me to the bazaar and got me a bottle of attar perfume, Indian perfume. And I still remember, I was holding it in the morning. Yes. And, the Baba story I remember is I was sitting on Baba's lap, and he was cuddling me and hugging me and playing with me, you know. And then being a woman, even at that age, you know, once a woman, even long before you know you're a woman, you're always a woman. And so Baba was playing with me and talking and the usual thing. And I said, well, it's my birthday next month. And Baba said, your birthday next month. Oh, that's wonderful. Another cuddle, another hug. And then Baba said, what is it that you want me to send you for your birthday? Well, I had it already in my mind, because I used to see, in our alley, I used to see a couple of the kids who had a tricycle. It was a new thing, and I thought it was a wonderful thing, and how wonderful it would be if I could have a tricycle, you see? So when Baba said, and what is it that I can send you for your birthday? I said, a tricycle. Baba said, a tricycle? Of course I'll send you a tricycle. And immediately I said, oh no, you won't. Baba said, of course I will. I said, you'll forget. Baba said, how can I forget? How can I forget your birthday? I love you, so how can I forget to send you this? I said, well, so you'll forget. So,
oh, I couldn't see, I couldn't imagine we were all talking like that.
I didn't really think he'd forget, but I wanted to make absolutely sure that he was going to send that tricycle.
Was Baba talking?
Yes. So then Baba said, he said, I swear I won't forget. And in the Indian, you catch the skin of your throat, like of your neck, like that, and you pull it out, and you swear by something very precious to you. You swear by your beard, or you swear by your child, or your parent, or anything very precious to you. And Baba said, I swear I won't forget. I swear by a hen.
A hen.
A hen. That completely satisfied me. Oh, well, Baba swore. Kasam. Kasam means swearing. Excuse me. So Baba has, you know, taken kasam. So of course he won't forget. Well, after that I was happy. I don't remember the next thing. The next thing I remember is I was home with mother in Pune. And in a few days it would be my birthday. And the next month would be my birthday. And every time when I saw people were coming in, I said, there's a tricycle Baba sent. So I'd rush first to the door, and I felt, no, it was the milkman or the vegetable man or some friend or some this or some that or the person. And every day I waited for that tricycle, and the tricycle never arrived. And by the time my birthday came, I was so miserable. Not because of the tricycle anymore, but Baba doesn't love me. Baba forgot me. He forgot my birthday. He said he wouldn't forget. And what was worst of all, he had even taken kasam. He had sworn. So when you're a four-year-old in a Parsi household, in a Zoroastrian household, up to the time you are 7 years old, each birthday is celebrated very, very nicely, you know, pompously almost. You're made to stand up on this wooden seat on which they put these chalk designs, and your best dress is on, And of course, first of all, you're made to take a bath very early in the morning, which is terrible. And then they give you presents, and they give you a lot of money, which they take away from you to put in the bank in your name. They leave you with 8 annas or 4 annas or something. But all the time, I was just miserable. I remember that misery. I remember that feeling. No tricycle even on my birthday. Then, then again the scene shifts. We are back in Mehrabad or Nasik. I don't remember where Baba was at the time. So my mother took me over again to be with Baba. And there again, as usual, usually I would run to Baba and knew I would be petted and cuddled and played with, and I just loved it. But this time it was Baba who had to come to me and, gather me in his arms. And there again I was sitting on his lap, and it's the usual thing. But I was as stiff as anything, you know. I wasn't moving, I wasn't giving any response. And Baba said, "What's the matter?" Nothing. Sort of, I didn't answer. But Baba said, "What's happened?" And then he said, "Ah, somebody has said something to you?" No, I wasn't saying, "Is it mother? Did mother say, scold you? Did somebody scold you? Did mother scold you?" Sort of Baba made a gesture, sort of, "I'll show mother if she's done that." And I said, "No, not mother? No. Did so-and-so do this? No. Did so-and-so do that? No." All that was exhausted. Then Baba said, "Then who?" And I turned around and said, "You." And Baba said, "Me?" He looked so innocent, so surprised. He said, "Me?" I said, "Yes, but what?" And then, of course, I just blurted out everything. I said, "You said you wouldn't forget, you don't love me anymore. You didn't even send me the tricycle. You said you'd send me a tricycle with my birthday." And Baba just listened. "Tricycle?" I said, "Yes, tricycle. You said you'd send it for my birthday." And then I added. And I said, "You even swore. You swore by head you wouldn't forget." Then Baba had the clue, and he said, "I remember. I didn't forget. Of course I love you, and I didn't forget your birthday. I was going to send you the tricycle. I swore by hen. But what can I do? The hen died." My world was well again. Everything was right and sunny. It wasn't Baba's fault. Baba hadn't forgotten me. Baba loved me. He hadn't forgotten me. Everything was all right. What could Baba do? It's that wretched hen went up and died. So what could Baba do? He swore by a hen. But all the hen's fault. Everything was the hen's fault. Oh, I was so happy. And I never had that tricycle, and I never thought about it.
I asked if you were there when Baba had changed.
And very strange, because this house with the well, it was as if it were built for us, for the family. Because, you know, that Baba room, where that was where Gustaji also, I mean, I have letters and things that prove how Gustaji was there, Bua Sahib was there, and Baba used to be in the room in that divine agony when he used to bang his head. But it was, nobody else had stayed there before. And the history is that first there was no house. There was just land, and there was this well. This well was supposed to be a sort of a holy well, in the sense that people would come and make a wish, and it would be fulfilled. And in the joy of the fulfillment, they would come and place flowers, a lace work of flowers, what we call jali, a net of flowers strung together. They would put that on the... even after the house was built, I remember as a child, every now and then somebody would ask permission to please come in and place this flower jali, full jali, on the well, and we would say yes. So there was this Zoroastrian lady who was so much in love with the well, she wanted to have it, to own it. So she bought the land that had the well, the plot. She had bought the plot that already had the well on it. And there were no houses around it, around this well. So then she built this house in such a way that it enclosed the well in her courtyard, as it were. She really loved that well. So she built that, had this house built. Now, her husband obviously had to take out a big debt in order to build this or something, because when it was completed, before they could live in it, the lady went to Bombay for some time, for some work, and the husband tried to sell it off. So that, I don't know the details as to the reasons and all, but he wanted to sell it off, she wanted to keep it. So he approached my father, who was just the toddy shop thing was going on. We had that little house in front of it, the pumpkin house. So my father said, yes, I can buy that. And so it was, the deal was gone through, and the house was ours. Then the lady came back and found out. Oh, she was furious, absolutely furious. My father said, had I known that you would be unhappy, and it is not that we approached, but it's your husband. So anyway, that I was then born, and the family moved over to Baba House. And that's where mother had a dream about the well. You all must have read it. Yeah.
About the well?
Yeah, about how, I don't remember very accurately or correctly, but this much I know, that in the dream, mother was standing with Baba, Mehran, little Mehran in her hand, baby Baba in her hand, and out of the well came these beautiful little women in green saris and green bangles, and you know, beautiful like goddesses. The Indian version of goddesses would be, I suppose. That's my saying. But these beautiful green clad saris, little women, and this woman came. She put out her hands. She was the main one. She put out her hands and wanted to take Marwan. And mother said, no, no, no. No, no, I won't give you. And she, what, you remember?
I read it.
Yeah. But somehow that story, so that everything fitted in so, in little ways, so perfectly. Like the time when Baba was to be born. He was born in the David Sisson Hospital, which is a Jewish hospital. And the nurses who delivered the baby were Catholic nuns. And she, of course, my father was a Persian born, or my family were all from Persia. And such a universal way. And he was in Pune, India. This is amazing.
Yeah.
But what was I saying? Yes. And then before Baba was born, my mother had this dream that she saw these enormous processions of people, all coming of all castes, all religions, all colors, all dresses, you know, different, all just coming in procession, just going by her while she stands there with a child, just this long procession, endless, and then growing, the more numbers growing, the people growing. And so in the morning she told her mother, my grandmother, said, Mommy, this is what a dream I had. She was very young then, 16 or something. And she said it was a very auspicious dream, and she told my father. My granny told my father. And my father said to my mother, she said, Shirin, you don't know who's to be born to us. My father always knew. Also, at the time when he turned back from his Darvishi, turned back, when the voice said, what you seek, you will find in your son. That's the time when he had to turn back. So my father knew that.
Did he ever say anything to you? Did he ever say anything about Baba? Do you remember him saying anything?
Yeah, it was just an understanding. I just knew that he knew. You see, and so did my mother in a way. Because I didn't have to acquire anything. I just knew from the first, from far back as I could remember anything, Baba is. He's God. He's my brother. There was no room for anything else. So I never thought even about it.